Call to order the joint hearing of the House Health Committee and the House Commerce Committee. Welcome, members. It's good to have everyone here to talk about this very critical hearing. I'm glad that Chair Liebling and I were able to arrange a time that we could do this. The sole subject of today's hearing is the proposed combination of Fairview and Sanford. This is one of the most significant transactions related to medical care in Minnesota in many, many years. The Fairview Health System, even not accounting for the university, is a significant provider of medical care in Minnesota. And we have to ensure that Minnesotans' access to care is not restricted and that costs are not driven up by this proposed combination. And looking at comparable transactions throughout the country and the state in recent history, that's not at all a given. Fairview System is also a significant employer in the state, and we want to make sure that Minnesota's doctors, nurses, and other practitioners and professionals are treated fairly. And then the University of Minnesota Medical School adds another wrinkle. It's one of the state's most important assets, and we can't allow it to be damaged or undermined by this transaction. Chair Liebling, I don't know if you have thoughts you wanted to add at this point.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and just to add my welcome to everyone. By the looking at the room here, there's quite a bit of public interest in this topic, and I know there has been some media coverage. Really appreciate everyone being here today, and I would just echo the comments that Chair Stevenson has made. We are really of a mind on this and really interested to hear some of the testimony today. So thank you, everyone. And so I don't know, Chair Stevenson, if you wanted to kind of lay out, if you plan to, kind of how we're going to proceed here, but I'll let you do that.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Liebling. Yes, so what we're going to do is we're going to hear from several key participants and notable people around the transaction. I'm going to ask members to hold their questions during the testimony. Well, then we'll have questions and discussion as to that testimony, and then we will be at the towards the end of the hearing looking at proposed legislative language authored by Representative Bierman. Roughly by Representative Bierman relating to these types of transactions. We will be starting hearing from the CEO of Fairview Health Services, James Hereford, if he's available. Thank you, sir. If you'd come down and state your name for the record and proceed to your testimony. We've given the participants to this section of the hearing 5 minutes. Mr. Brown will be keeping track of time. And the time limit is just, there's a lot of people interested and we want to make sure that we have time to get through everything. So appreciate you being here today. Welcome to the committee and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Chair Stevenson, Chair Liebling, and committee members, thank you for convening this hearing. We appreciate the opportunity to share how a combined Sanford Health and Fairview Health Services will benefit the state of Minnesota, fellow Minnesotans, and patients who choose to receive their care from us. My name is James Hereford. I am President and CEO of Fairview Health Services. Since we announced our intent to combine last November, we're often asked why. We do this out of a deep regard for the privilege and responsibility we have as a not-for-profit organization to serve our patients and our communities. The past few years have tested our nation's healthcare delivery systems and our caregivers like never before. Over half the care delivery systems in the country lost money last year. Our caregivers were heroes in the face of a deadly pandemic. While the rest of society has largely moved on, the impact on caregivers remains. Clinical burnout and labor shortages are at historic levels, and patient violence is on the rise. I do not blame our teammates for being frustrated. They deserve to be. But there's no returning to the status quo. Healthcare delivery must adapt, innovate, and seek ways to remove barriers and burdens faced by our patients and by our staff. Our merger with Sanford means we can spread the costs of innovative new technologies across a broader care delivery system. And it gives us the ability to lower our cost structures in areas such as medical technology, pharmaceuticals, and information technology, which are about one-third of our overall costs. Through the Attorney General's community meetings and beyond, we've heard powerful stories. We've heard from a patient in Worthington managing a recent cancer diagnosis. Sanford's investment in advanced care, cancer care technology in Worthington means they no longer need to make the hour-long drive for treatment. We heard from a resident in Bemidji who was able to spend the last several years of their mother's life with her at home instead of driving to and from the Twin Cities every week because investments made in Bemidji allowed her physicians to have state-of-the-art telehealth services. We heard community organizers who shared how Fairview's investments in community clinics and health outreach mean people can see a doctor or receive an immunization regardless of their immigration, income, or insurance status. These stories are why we do what we do and why we so firmly believe that together we can provide better care and more services to more people in our communities. We've also heard important questions, which we value and are eager to address. We heard concerns about access to comprehensive reproductive care and gender care. Both Fairview and Sanford are committed to ensuring the independence of our medical staff. Our providers will continue to have the autonomy to practice evidence-based medicine in accordance with state and federal laws. Access to gender-affirming and comprehensive reproductive health care will not change as a result of this merger. Our patients must have the ability to make important decisions about their health care in consultation with their trusted health care providers. This trusted relationship is fundamental to who we are and what we do, and it will not change. Importantly, this merger is not one of reduction, but rather of growth. We have nearly 9,000 job openings between our two organizations. This is about creating more and better opportunities to pursue rewarding healthcare careers. As you know, Fairview has a significant unionized workforce. We consider all of our staff to be part of our family. We're committed to honoring our collective bargaining agreements. Nothing about this merger will change those agreements. And as a proud 501c3 not-for-profit organization, we operate in accordance with Minnesota's nonprofit statutes and other laws regarding mergers of nonprofit organizations. We'll continue to work with the Attorney General's office in his review as it relates to the merger of our two organizations. Finally, I want to address those who have alluded to Sanford as an outsider, a foreign entity from the Dakotas, unfit to participate in Minnesota's healthcare ecosystem. The reality is, Sanford has provided high-quality care to Minnesotans for the past 25 years. With more than 7,000 dedicated employees, including 22 separate union-represented bargaining units, 20 hospitals, 70 clinics, including Bemidji, Thief River Falls, Worthington, and Laverne. Instead of looking at the differences, our focus must be on addressing the real problems our communities face and are coming together to create real solutions to those problems. Sanford has, and in fact, doubled down in communities where few, if any, care options remain, ensuring that struggling hospitals stay open through Greater Minnesota. It is this dedication to their communities and patients that underscores why Sanford is the right partner for us and for the state of Minnesota. I look forward to answering your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Bill Gasson, the CEO at Sanford. Thank you for being with us today. If you could state your name for the record and proceed your testimony. Again, 5 minutes.
Yeah, thank you, Bill Gasson. Good afternoon. Thank you to Chair Stevenson, Chair Liebling, and the committee members who are hosting us here today. We appreciate the opportunity to share with you our vision and how it will benefit patients and the communities that we serve. My name is Bill Gasson, President and CEO of Sanford Health. As CEO, I have committed our organization with one fundamental principle in mind, and that is at the end of every decision is a patient. Sanford Health is dedicated to transforming the healthcare experience and providing access to world-class care here in America's heartland. Our integrated health system is nationally recognized for quality and provides expert care in more than 80 specialties and includes a health plan, a senior care division, a medical research enterprise, and graduate medical education that trains hundreds of residents and fellows each year. And when we say that patients will have access to better care, we mean it. Following our merger with North Country Health Services in Bemidji, Sanford Health invested more than $100 million to increase access to specialty care, including mental health, cardiology, orthopedics, and oncology. And after merging with MeritCare in 2009, we invested more than $1 billion of capital in the northwest part of the state, bringing level one trauma to Fargo-Moorhead and a state-of-the-art community hospital in Thief River Falls. We are committed also to working upstream to focus on social determinants of health. For example, as a part of an initiative to address food insecurity in 2020, Sanford Health made a $3 million investment in food banks, including $1 million here in the state of Minnesota. Bringing our charitable and community outreach work together will extend the impact of our efforts and allow us to engage a broader population across rural, urban, and tribal communities alike. It has been a privilege to join the community listening sessions across the state, and I would like to thank Attorney General Ellison for creating these forums, which have allowed us to share our vision and hear directly from Minnesotans. In response to a few of the important issues that we have heard, we have provided written assurances to Attorney General, and I'd like to use this opportunity to reaffirm those assurances for you all today. First, nothing will change for the University of Minnesota as a result of this merger. As a combined system, we are committed to honoring the current agreements through their expiration in 2026, including the level of funding, clinical partnership, and the teaching mission. The affiliation agreement will continue to be governed by a local, Minnesota-based regional board. The university remains independent and will continue to make its own decisions regarding its future. Second, the proposed combination will not result in fewer options for gender-affirming care and comprehensive women's health care, including abortion care. Third, we have no plans to close Minnesota facilities or reduce access to care as a result of this merger. Fourth, Sanford Health has long had unionized workforces in Minnesota, and we will continue to honor and respect our collective bargaining agreements post-merger. The combined system will not divert or transfer from Minnesota any assets donated in Minnesota, and such donations will be used exclusively for the charitable purposes for which they are intended and designated. Finally, I want to address the intended timeline for our merger. We respect, first and foremost, the role of the Attorney General in this process, and we will continue to work closely with him and his office to ensure that they receive the information necessary to complete their review. This merger is about doing more for those we serve, and every day we delay is a missed opportunity to realize the significant benefits for our patients, for our people, and the communities we serve. It's also about taking critical steps to provide the necessary financial sustainability to serve Minnesota communities for generations to come. So in closing, Sanford Health is proud of our 25-year track record of providing high-quality, world-class care here in the state of Minnesota. This merger is about increasing access, it's about improving quality, and it's about expanding services. Our combined system will be better for patients. It will be better for our caregivers, for our employees, and the communities that we serve. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to share this vision with you, and I look forward to the conversation today. Thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate you being here today, both of you, and I also appreciate your willingness to stand for questions, and I hope you don't mind that we hear from the other testifiers before we get to the questions.
Certainly,
Chair.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Next, we're going to hear from University of Minnesota, so I would welcome Myron Franz and Dr. Jacob Tolar to the podium. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for joining us. If you would state your names for the record and then proceed to your testimony.
Again, Chair Stevenson, Chair Liebling, members. My name is Jacob Tolar. I'm the Dean of Medical School at the University of Minnesota and Vice President for Clinical Affairs. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to comment about the Fairview and Sanford merger combination. It will have a very significant impact on the state of Minnesota, on the University of Minnesota, and on the medical school. This medical school, and I have served this medical school for 30 years now, is the only public medical school in the state, and we do multiple things, but the three that I would highlight are, we train physicians, 70% of them in the state of Minnesota. We are nationally high ranking in the rural training, which is an incredible need for the state, And we are one of the very few campuses in the United States that have all health science schools together, the nursing, pharmacy, public health, vet med, dentistry. And that allows us to train in interprofessional team way, which keeps the teams cohesive. Now, we are also innovating. If you have standard of care like ALS or untreatable cancer, my day job, you need something new. So because of your support, of state support that has been consistent, we have been able to elevate the medical school for the first time in decades in the top 10% in the United States this year. And then all these things combine on the clinical practice. So that's what we do for a living. That's why we went to the medical school in the first place. And that combination is the winning application, in my opinion. And we are in a huge demand. The clinical arm of the university called University of Minnesota Physicians, the practice that we have, is seeing 1.2 million patient encounters in a single year alone. Now, you take this all together and you will say, how can we improve upon this? How can we get better at what we are doing here? And I would say that the state support that you have provided and guided is the reason why Minnesota is known for healthcare. So with this background, I'll get back to the central question. I would argue that the focus, the core of our considerations today and as we consider this combination, is not a private business deal between the two healthcare organizations. This is a central question that goes to our ability to serve you, to serve the state, and our obligation as a land-grant university and its medical school. And because this is the central question, because this has not been considered in the letter of intent between Sanford and Fairview, we will oppose this at this time. Now, even if the contracts are in place, the governance of the system will move to a board without university representation. That means without your vision and without your input in this, in the facilities and operations that make the University of Minnesota Medical School and the health science schools possible. So this is a landmark possibility to chart the future of healthcare and medicine in the state of Minnesota. And our vision centers on seizing the moment so that we can advance academic medicine, we can advance access, and we can provide for Minnesotans the healthcare that they deserve. Chair Stevenson, Chair Liebling, thank you very much for listening to me. And I'll turn now to my friend, Myron Franz.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members, well, as you can tell, I hate to follow Jacob Toller in speaking, but my name is Myron Franz. I'm the Chief Financial Officer, the Chief Operating Officer, and the Treasurer for the state for the University of Minnesota. On January 12th, President Gabel announced the five-point vision, the Impact Healthcare Innovation Vision. The vision centers on the commitment that all Minnesotans have access to a top-tier, nation-leading academic health system that makes a difference in their lives and literally saves lives. The vision hinges on five key factors. Number one, a genuine integration of teaching and research into clinical care. Our approach is not only about the clinical care of the patient, it is also about the education of their future physician and training. Simply stated, academic medicine takes more time and a different approach. Number two, we're concerned about the university governance over flagship facilities on the university campus. The university, not a healthcare system, we believe, must be in charge of those facilities. Number three, a public mission that rests on relationships with healthcare systems throughout the state, maximizing the reach of our mission. So we know that and understand that the value of our research, the value of our teaching, and the value of our care is best maximized when it is shared broadly with every practitioner in the state. And number four, we have been prudently and strategically acquiring land for a new hospital for years. This is more than a dream. It is a requirement to ensure the quality of teaching and research that healthcare professionals require. We need your help to make this a reality. And number five, while we await the new hospital, we will need your help to maintain the current flagship facilities. The mission of the university and the public interest of the state must be front and center, as Dr. Toler mentioned. I'm here today to request a delay of the merger until Fairview, Sanford, and the University of Minnesota agree on a comprehensive plan to address essential issues on our five-point plan, in particular, number two, about returning control of the university's flagship facilities to the university, and number three, designing the operational financial relationship with our community health system to incentivize all parties to assist the university in delivering world-class academic health care to the state of Minnesota. We have shared these requirements and will be continuing discussions with Fairview and Stanford and have a meeting scheduled for February 1st for further discussions. We'd also like to thank Attorney General Keith Ellison, who has called for a slowdown of the Fairview-Sanford merger. The Attorney General recognizes that it's more important to do this right than to do it fast. And finally, we request that a final agreement between Sanford and Fairview be developed with the university's involvement and that any plan is grounded in a vision that will support the public health and public health care access to all of Minnesotans. The plan must not divert from the public nature of the university's flagship hospitals, and we must seek to have their original purpose and ongoing mission supported. And with that, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, we're happy to go back and wait for questions.
Thank you both very much for your testimony, and we appreciate you sticking around for questions later. Next, I want to welcome back to the committee the Attorney General of the State of Minnesota, Keith Ellison. It's always a pleasure to have you here, Mr. Attorney General. Thank you for your time today.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, thank you all for having me here. Members, certainly appreciate an opportunity to address you on this very critical matter. You know, I think it was around October of last year that I was contacted and sat in a meeting, a fairly impromptu one, where I was advised that this merger was being seriously contemplated. The merger of Sanford Health and Fairview Health Systems is enormously important to the state of Minnesota, not only because of the health impact, not only because of the fact that it would impact our teaching and academic health research center, but also because it involved thousands of employees in both entities and involved clearly thousands of patients. The Attorney General's office is by statute required to enforce all laws regarding antitrust enforcement and charities laws, and also has a responsibility to the public interest. Therefore, we took a very active interest in trying to learn everything we can about this merger as it relates to the people of the state of Minnesota, healthcare patients, workers, everybody concerned. The fact is that if we conclude that this merger violates a statute in the state of Minnesota, it is our responsibility to enforce that statute. And if that we don't, then it's our responsibility not to enforce statutes that are not violated. This is very important. And to that end, we have embarked upon an effort to learn as much as we can. I'd like to tell you a little bit about that. We have, first of all, started an internal investigation. And that internal investigation, I am by statute not allowed to talk about publicly. But I can tell you this, it's robust. We are in the midst of gathering documentation. We haven't received all the documentation we have asked for. That is not because of lack of cooperation. It's just the fact of the investigative process. We also have had a robust external fact gathering process. So we've had our website. We've had 3,500 separate messages of and concerning this. From the public's perspective, and we've heard from a wide range of people with a wide range of interests. We have received information in the form of phone communication, not just text messages and emails, but and we've made it, we've received information through our website. We've also had we've also had three public meetings and have the last one scheduled for tomorrow. The first one was in St. Paul. The next one was in Bemidji. The third one was in Worthington, and tomorrow is Grand Rapids. All have been very, very well attended, and we've had people of diverse backgrounds speak against it, in favor of it, and some who speak in both in favor and against it, and caution us what we should look out for as we move forward, if we move forward. As I noted earlier, we've received about 3,500 different comments. That's actually not true. The updated number is over 4,000 pieces of separate communication from people. Minnesotans are paying attention, are engaged, and what happens here will affect Minnesota for quite a long while. Now, because my office has a responsibility to do its due diligence, I can assure you that we have well over 12 people working on this matter, researching it from different perspectives. As I noted, part of it is a review of the charities law, part of it is a review of the antitrust law, and I have other members just looking at what, how the public views it being itself being impacted by this. On the charities matter, I can tell you that there have been a number of things that have been raised that I continue to pay close attention to. And on the charities front, we continue to hear from the public and we continue to be concerned ourselves about what will happen to Minnesota assets. Assets that are paid for, designed for Minnesotans might be used for another purpose. We need to be making sure that that does not happen. At this point, I'm confident one of the things that we will be looking for assurances for is that assets of Minnesota will be used in the way they were originally intended. This is very much, this is an important part of our investigation. Also, while the interests of the University of Minnesota are not on all fours with that of the Attorney General, it is a public institution. It is a public institution with a public mission. I think that probably the testifiers before I arrive here mentioned to you that about 70% of all doctors in Minnesota graduate from the University of Minnesota. So it is that we have to, as from the Attorney General standpoint, take in the impact on the University of Minnesota, given that it is a public institution. And the University of Minnesota and Fairview have unfinished business to discuss relative to their healthcare facilities, as you've already heard. And this is part of our analysis, given the public nature of their work and how it impacts the public interest. We also are concerned about potential. We also have questions about, and I have to be candid about this, it was in the news recently that Fairview had a downgrade of its bond rating from Moody's. We're concerned about that because it's not clear to us why that's happening. It would be, I hope to learn why, because you hope that a merger will help stabilize an entity, but will it? The fact is that's an open question. And so that's something that we would like to have more information about, and I think it's fair to ask about. On the issue of antitrust and competition, we are concerned about a reduction in competition. There are parts of our state where there's overlap, though in many parts of our state there's not. But it's not as if there's not overlap in some parts of our state on critical services. The people who have come to our hearings have voiced very high concern about reduction in competition, which could result in reduction of potential services, higher insurance rates, and a potential negative impact on employees. Nearly every union in our state, including the Minnesota AFL-CIO, has voiced opposition, and so have the nurses. They are employees, they are Minnesotans, and their voices matter. We've also heard a number of public concerns, the fate of the University Hospital and medical education, union contracts, gender-affirming health care. We've heard people voice concerns about reproductive health care, governance, and again, possible closings.
And Mr. Attorney General, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
I'll
you
stop.
Can try and I'll give you. You good?
I just, yeah. Well, how about I wrap up?
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So let me just say this. We believe at the State Attorney General's office that March 31st as a target date is too ambitious. We believe with all the research that we have to do and have not had a chance to complete, all the negotiations that have to have, that this is not, that this date is not in the best interest of the state of Minnesota. We think that the investigation needs more time. The legislature needs more time. Minnesotans need more time. We have sent such a communication to the parties to seek more time, and we hope to hear that from them by tomorrow. They're not late. We've asked for a timeline. I want to also conclude by saying that our process has been amicable and cooperative so far. I want you to know that I appreciate how everybody with an interest in this outcome has cooperated and talked. I hope that that will remain, but I'm not surprised if things do sharpen, because this so very much is at stake with this merger, and the interests of the people of this state are at stake. And I hope that people will continue to be engaged and pay very close attention, because it's so very important for the reasons we all know. With that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney General. I appreciate that. We will now hear from two representatives from the unions that are involved. We have from the Minnesota Nurses Association, Kara Pratt and Sandy Anderson. Come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed to your testimony.
Hi, my name is Kara Pratt. Thank you for having me to speak today. I'm a labor nurse at St. John's Hospital in Maplewood. I've been there since 1999. I'm very proud of my hospital and the work that we do there. I believe our care is second to none, and I love my patients and my coworkers. I believe we do great work at St. John's, but it feels like it's been much harder since M Health Fairview took over. Our structure used to be very bottom up. The nurses had real input into what happened with our patients. We were on committees that informed the decisions that we made on how things went. Since the merger, the nurses at the bedside have lost the ability to have much say over how care is delivered. We take our orders from some executives sitting in offices in Minneapolis. They don't know me, and they don't know my patients. I'm not opposed to change. Healthcare is always evolving, and we learn more and better ways of doing things every day. What is frustrating to me and my colleagues is when I question why we are doing something new without a clear benefit to our patient care, and we are being told because that's how Fairview does it. In other words, because it's what the executives want. St. John's has some of the best maternal child outcomes in the Twin Cities, but instead of Fairview asking us what they can learn from us about why we have the lowest C-section rate in the entire Twin Cities, they just come along and tell us, this is the way Fairview does it, so this is how you will do it now too. Healthcare should not be a one-size-fits-all situation. We have a different community in St. Paul than they have in Minneapolis, and yet we are being told to do things just like Minneapolis. And we're the lucky ones. While St. John's remains open, Fairview closed two other Health East hospitals during the middle of a pandemic. You realize they closed hospitals in the middle of a pandemic because they weren't profitable. They had patients that were full in these hospitals. They closed them. They closed the long-term acute care facility, and as other people have commented, we now have a major backup in our hospitals of long-term patients who would be eligible for long-term acute care that we can't find placement for. And now they're in our acute care hospital, which is backing up our patients into our emergency rooms. Now I'm being told we're going to be bought by Sanford Health. As we all know, Sanford Health is based in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They will come with their own agenda and their own way of doing things. We will now be doing things the Sanford way. Once again, these are new healthcare executives. They don't live in our communities, and they will be making decisions about our patients based on what's profitable for them. My concern is this: how is some executive in Sioux Falls supposed to know what's best for my patients? Do they even know who the Karen people are? Do they know what the Hmong community needs? Do they know who a Nepali refugee is? I don't know that they know these things. They're a rural healthcare facility. They're not used to taking care of urban hospitals. They don't have urban hospitals. Their business model is very different. It's focused on rural communities. That's not who we are. And they're also, you know, famous for closing rural hospitals, okay? We need more facilities available in the rural communities, not less.
And I hate to interrupt, but can you get to
the end? I'm just about done.
Thank you.
Nurses, patients, and the community of healthies have already seen firsthand what happens when corporate acquisitions and a focus on the bottom line take priority over care at the bedside. We cannot afford more corporate health care in Minnesota, especially not from an even bigger corporation with even less connection to our community. I thank you for allowing me to speak today. As a nurse, I am passionate about the community I serve and the care I deliver. I will always provide the best care possible to my patients. I ask you to help me do that by keeping local control of our community.
Thank you for that testimony. And I think maybe there was a miscommunication here. I think we were thinking of 3 minutes for in total for
I'm
the
sorry.
Two of you.
I got kind of
so I don't know if you have brief, I can get, I don't, if you want to go for like a minute, that would be okay. But
that would be fine, yeah.
Thank you.
Chair Stephenson and Liebling for the and the committee for allowing us to speak. I'll speak towards the workers' concerns. As a nurse with Minnesota Nurses Association and part of the Twin Cities, I wasn't on the negotiating team, but we just went through practically 9 months worth of some pretty tense conversations. At one point, we found out that the merger was even happening by an article that was in the Sioux Falls newspaper. When our nurses asked representatives and management at the table about the merger, they knew nothing about it. When the language came down to being signed in our agreements, they will only honor, they meaning Sanford, will only honor our contract until November. That's November. We all know what is said is what is said, and what is written is what you have to be accountable for. We do not have faith or confidence that they will honor our contract. We know in Bemidji, they got rid of Minnesota Nurses Union representation there. The nurses fought back. They got signatures. M&A represents the nurses in Bemidji. We do not have faith.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you being here today. Thank you for that. Our last testifier is from SEIU Healthcare, Gene Sparks. Welcome to the committee. You can just state your name for the record and proceed your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gene Sparks. I'm the SEIU organizer at work sites managed by each company. Actually, I represent healthcare workers, so your nursing assistants, your clerical techs, x-ray techs, basically anyone who's not a nurse or a doctor at the hospital. I've been able to hear concerns from workers like this on the proposed merger. Serious worries are held by all of the members that I represent about combining two corporate giants like this. Members at the university medical centers have legitimate concerns already about Fairview. They experience already everything from frequent headache-inducing payroll errors to staffing challenges that threaten their own safety on the job. They have remote and distant managers and executives that make decisions that affect frontline workers without ever actually having been a frontline worker themselves. Why should they trust that Fairview would have the managerial capacity to handle such a large and complicated merger without further exacerbating the issues that workers already face there? We've also watched as Fairview has monetized health and stripped away care, to paraphrase one of our union members. Our union members have seen firsthand that positions go unfilled, people go untrained, and safety and quality get put on the back burner in the name of a bottom line for a corporate budget. Our members and all Minnesotans have no reason to suspect that a merger that creates the largest monopolized health care provider in the Midwest would do anything to change the course of the company's turning away from the care part of health care. These concerns are magnified when considering the arguments that are made by our union and others, as well as the University of Minnesota physicians, that rightly call into question the sanity of putting a public Minnesota service like the University of Minnesota into the hands of a non-Minnesota entity. I also mentioned that I represent members at Sanford Medical Center in Worthington. Their concerns run parallel to the folks at the university. They have deep mistrust of a merger this large. It's got them rightfully worried about reduction of services and staff in their small communities. They've seen as other medical conglomerates have come into small towns with promises of increased access and higher quality care, only to fall short even in the best of cases. More often than not, small town Minnesota sees the loss of services, sees the closure of a family birthplace when big business comes to town. Though the CEOs of Fairview and Sanford make promises that we've all heard before, the fact is that with this deal, far too much of the possible outcome of any merger relies on the shaky word of just two individuals. Add to that the false sense of urgency they've created with an arbitrary and self-imposed deadline of March, and we've got a recipe for disaster for workers and patients across the entire region. The members of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota and Iowa stood against this merger last time Sanford and Fairview tried it, and we still stand firmly against it today. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Appreciate your that. So we are going to move to member discussion and questions of the testifiers. For the Health Committee members, I want to introduce Simon Brown, the committee administrator for the Commerce Committee. He's the person who's keeping the list, so if you catch his eye, he'll get you on the list. I'm going to exercise the chair's prerogative, though, and go first and ask some questions of our two CEOs, if you could make your way up to the front. I have some questions, and I did hear from Attorney General Ellison and others that you have been cooperative and amicable, I think were his words, in this, and I appreciate that very much, and you being here today is further evidence of that, and I do appreciate that. I just had some questions about the timeline here. So I understand there's a March 31st date that you all are driving towards, and maybe I could direct these questions just for lack of confusion to Mr. Hereford first, and then Mr. Gaston, if you have something you want to interject, you can. But can you tell me, when did these discussions begin in earnest, the merger discussions for this round?
Well, in earnest is a less than exact operational term, but I would say that Bill and I had an initial dinner in Denver on May 31st. In which we talked about our organizations and about our aspirations, and at the end of that concluded that there was an opportunity for us to talk more about the potential of bringing them together.
Okay. And I understand that the University of Minnesota has three seats on your board. Can you clarify for me, when was the university notified of the seriousness of these merger discussions?
Prior to our board meeting in August 9th was our board meeting. The Sunday prior, we sat down with Myron France, Jacob Toller, who you correctly identify as board members, as well as Doug Peterson, the chief legal counsel of the university, with my board chair, and talked to them prior to our having the conversation at our board.
I understand there's a letter of intent, and that's where the March 31st date comes from. When was that letter signed?
Signed on... Anybody have the answer to that? Sorry.
Call a friend on that one. I don't mean it to be a pop quiz.
No. I'm going to say it was September. I know. We'll get you the exact date.
And I understand that letter of intent is not public. I wonder if you'd be willing to share it with the committee.
I think we've got. Yeah, we don't have any problems with that. No concerns. Right. I just want to make sure from a legal perspective we're good with that. So
I appreciate that.
I'll phone a friend on legal counsel as well.
I heard the Attorney General say that he was notified in October. Do you dispute that?
I don't know the exact date we sat down with the Attorney General, but it was approximate late September, early October.
And the public was notified on November 16th. That's the earliest I could find a news reporting. I assume you would agree with that.
I would agree with that.
Okay. And we're scheduled to close sometime around the 31st of March.
Well, can I just comment on the schedule to close? We don't control when this closes, right? Because we don't control the regulatory processes we go through either at the federal or the state level. Mm-hmm. What we did say was we wanted to have a planning date so that we could think about, this is a fairly complex transaction and there's a lot of work to do. So we had a planning date that was used internally. That is the March 31st date.
That's what's on your letter of intent, as I understand. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So what I have heard in the testimony today is the Attorney General indicating that he's still waiting for some documents, that you're being cooperative, but he's still waiting for some documents.
Correct.
I heard the University of Minnesota indicate that they would like more time. I heard the Attorney General say that he believes that the March 31st day is not in the best interest of Minnesota. I wrote that phrase down. I heard SEIU Healthcare indicate that they view that as a rushed date as well. So. And I will add my own voice to that March 31st is, in my view, far too soon for such an important transaction for the state of Minnesota. I would say that what I'm hearing is that your most significant business partnership with the university is asking for more time. Your workers are asking for more time. The Attorney General, your proposed regulator, is asking for more time. I think perhaps more time is necessary for the people that you're looking to interact with, Mr. Gasson, for the first time here in the Twin Cities area to make a good first impression. So my question to both of you, and whoever wants to take it first, is can we get rid of this March 31st date and say that we're going to allow this to go longer until everyone has the information they need to make a reasoned judgment? Can we ditch the March 31st date?
I'll start with, if that's right. Chair Stevenson, appreciate your question. What I would say to that is not yet at this time, and the rationale for that is I do want to be clear. March 31st, as Mr. Hereford stated, is really a target date, which, as we all know in this room, is more than 2 months away. There's a lot of work yet to be done. And I want to separate the two groups who've talked about this in particular that you rattled off here, who had the opportunity to testify. So there's the matter from a regulatory perspective with the Attorney General's office. And as we've stated here, our commitment right now is to continue to work very closely with his office to make certain that he has all of the necessary information to be able to make the right decision and complete his review. In my speculation, it's a little early to call that. I'm not ready to call quits 2 months before that's done. But what we are committed to doing and what we have communicated in writing is that we're going to sit down and work with that team. And if we get to a point where we realize that we need more time, we've got more information that has to get there, we're, of course, going to continue to work closely with his office to make sure we can do that. As it relates to the university side of the house, as we try to be very clear, we value Mr. Franz, Dr. Tolar, and all who they represent in that perspective. But relative to a request for a delay in the timeline, that really has no bearing on the relationship. Today, there is, in fact, a contract that's in place that controls the relationship, and that runs through 2026. So one of the things that I've tried to be very, very clear about is that as a combined system, we are absolutely committed to every aspect of that, including, and there was a conversation up here relative to governance, that contract will be held, and the board of authority over that contract will be a Minnesota entity that will oversee that. And as a part of that, they also have the opportunity to continue to serve and to populate those appropriate board seats on that board should the university so choose. And so I just want to make sure that nobody feels like it's sort of a sleight of hand, but that means that there's not a change in that relationship. It's controlled here at a local level. Perhaps the only change is now as it relates to the sustainability from a financial perspective, you have two systems that are supported and committed to making sure that all the payments that are called for underneath that happen and that we continue to live up underneath that agreement. And I think more important than all of that is our ongoing commitment, as you heard Mr. Franz state up here, is that we're going to continue to meet. When we first met with them the first week of August, I committed at that time that every single week I would be here in the Twin Cities, I would be in their offices, and I would meet with them to get to the right place, to make sure that whatever that right relationship looks like, and we don't speak for the university, we don't get to make their decision, but whatever that ends up needing to look like in order to serve out their mission, we're committed to doing that. That does not go away. That commitment remains today. It remains after we're done with the merger, and again, There is no cliff. There's nothing that we're worried about sort of stopping or ending because we have the protection of that agreement that runs all the way through 2026, which ensures for the people of Minnesota that the funding continues, the commitment to teaching continues, the facilities continue to be available and for use. And so that should be very reassuring. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the answer. I'm going to let other members ask questions, but I'll just comment and say that I find that answer extremely disappointing. I think that we have all of the stakeholders in here in Minnesota seem to be pretty united in asking for you to allow more time for this to persist. It seems like a reasonable request, and I don't think it's starting off on the right foot in this relationship that you hope to pursue with the institutions in this state to not honor that. But that's disappointing, but we'll move to other member questions. Oh, and Chair Liebling, go ahead.
Yeah, and thank you. And just Chair's privilege here a little bit just to follow up. And I have to say, what I wrote down as the two of you were testifying is, what's the rush? And I honestly, for your having answered or attempted to answer Chair Stevenson's questions, I'm still left with the question, what is the rush? The other, and let me just tell you my other question, and then I'll let you respond to both of them. The other one that I really have in mind, and I think the Attorney General perhaps alluded to this as well, you mentioned a few things. I know both of you talked about gender-affirming care, reproductive health care that would remain available. I think there was mention of not closing facilities, et cetera. And my question is, what guarantees does the state have? What guarantees do the people of Minnesota have that the things you're saying here today that make this sound like it's just a benign, you know, no problem, this will just make everything better? What guarantees are there in this for Minnesotans?
Mr. Gasson.
Do you want to address that one first?
Yeah. Madam Chair, if it's all right, I'll start sort of from your last and we'll work forward. And Mr. Hereford wants to contribute to that as well. I think it is important. I appreciate your question. As it relates to the preservation of the care that's extended here in the state of Minnesota, and I agree with you. I wouldn't just take two individuals' words for it, regardless of who they are, but instead, look at the way in which care is both decided today and the way it will be tomorrow. I think the people of the state of Minnesota believe very firmly that that belongs between that sacred relationship between the physician, the provider, and the patients. And so do we. And so as we go forward as a part of a combined system, it will be expressly enumerated in the bylaws that where those decisions are made will be made by the local medical staffs who govern and practice medicine in those care facilities. They will be the individuals who make that decision, that the board that oversees and works with those medical centers and their providers will be a Minnesota-based board. And that board will be the board of ultimate authority as it relates to the provision of that care. And so that is the guarantee that the care that's provided today, that's extended to the patients of the state of Minnesota, will continue into the future, but that will not change, that will not be reduced as a result of this merger.
Are those, and I'm sorry to interject, are those documents prepared? Those bylaws and those documents that you're saying are the guarantee, are those written up? Do they exist in the world?
Well, the bylaws absolutely do. Every organization has to have those, of course. And since the organizations are not yet combined, those, of course, are not yet completed. But as a part of the finalization of the merger between the two organizations, we'll, of course, have new articles, new bylaws, and a final definitive agreement. And so they'll be expressly included therein.
And you that's the way to the committee as well.
Those documents, I'd have to check, phone a friend on council as to whether we can. Yeah, no problems with that from a council perspective. Yeah.
And if I could address the why the rush, another way of saying that would be, what's the reason for doing this at all? And I understand. I'm in a particular position as a CEO of a healthcare organization, a fairly large one, fairly important one, as is Mr. Gasson. Healthcare delivery is in crisis in this country. It is fundamentally changing. The pharmaceutical industry collectively represents $11 trillion in market cap. The seven largest managed care organizations in the country represent $1 trillion in market cap. They have taken advantage during the course of the pandemic to strengthen their positions, to garner cash, and to use that not to the betterment of care delivery systems. We're the ones who are at the point of care who need to make sure that we're there every day, that that ED is open for your mother, for your husband, for your spouse, for your children. That is our responsibility. So moving forward with this absolutely helps us do that and respond. And as Mr. Gasson said, every day of delay is a day we're not making progress on that. So is there something magical about March 31st? Of course not. But we cannot fool ourselves to think the status quo is going to be maintained. We're not going back to pre-COVID conditions. Healthcare delivery has fundamentally changed. And it is imperative upon us, in our role to serve Minnesotans, to make sure that we adapt, we innovate, and we continue to progress care. That's why it's important to move forward.
We have a number of members with questions, so I'm going to ask members to try and keep their questions a little pointed and ask anyone who's responding to a question to also try and be direct in their response. Representative Katisa-Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to all the testifiers for joining us today. I have a number of concerns about this proposal. One in particular is increased healthcare costs that data shows us that are likely to happen as a result of a merger. And my constituents have been sharing their concerns about the challenges of paying for healthcare for years. So I'm hopeful that me and, you know, other members will probably raise some questions on that. I want to go back to the comments on reproductive health care. The House and the Senate in Minnesota have now both passed the Protect Reproductive Options Act. The governor will be signing it this week. On the whole, Minnesotans support reproductive freedom. And it's my understanding that Sanford does not currently provide all forms of reproductive health care. I'm curious if you can, Mr. Gasson, detail which services are available to patients or are not available, and if that is in response to local or state regulatory statutes.
Mr. Gasson.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. So today at Sanford Health, we do provide medically necessary abortion care. It is, as you indicate, different on a state-by-state basis. In addition to letting our physicians decide, we, of course, have to comply with federal and state laws. So what that looks like and how that's delivered on a state-by-state basis is different. As it relates to the specific provisions of each one of those cares, of types of care, I'd have to refer off to you some of our medical experts to give you a little bit more of a detailed answer. But what I can tell you is that we do, in fact, today provide medically necessary abortion care in our facilities in compliance with the state law in the states where we provide that care. And I think more importantly is, as I explained before, as it relates to the concern, and that's completely appropriate, that those who you represent would have concerns that they'd want to lift up around the access to that care. As I stated before, what they have access to today will not be decreased as a result of this merger. And that is absolutely guaranteed by the way that I explain that and the way that that will be expressly enumerated in the documents that will control the combined organization to allow them to be assured of that which is very important to them, those decisions that they have the privilege of making with their physician and themselves.
Representative Katisa Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that. Now, just in terms of the bylaw explanation that you gave to Chair Liebling a couple minutes ago, those bylaws are written by the two companies as the merger goes forward. Is that correct? And the board then having the final say over which services might still be available? I'm not sure if I understood that correctly.
Mr. Gass.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I apologize for not being clear enough on that. So the way in which that works is that at, use for example, St. John's as an example, the physicians who are privileged and credentialed there, those individuals would populate that medical committee and their medical executive committee. And they would be making decisions around those who should be privileged and credentialed to be qualified to be able to provide services there and the services that are provided there in that facility. Those decisions are made, and the board of ultimate authority that decides that is controlled there by that entity. And so when there's conversations around sort of there's a parent board or there's a board in Sioux Falls, those types of things, those have no control or bearing on that. I firmly believe, and this is not sort of a narrowly held belief, but I think any good health system believes that those decisions need to be made by that local medical staff who knows the patients, who know their colleagues, and are in the best position to decide what care should be delivered there. And so the bylaws that will be drafted, oftentimes using outside counsel, that will help put those together, and those become then the incorporated documents for that entity.
Representative, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope this is my last follow-up, but in discussion about the PRO Act, it has already been suggested by a number of my colleagues that counties and cities should be able to opt out of providing fundamental reproductive health care services. So I have a little bit of concern when you say that local medical providers should be able to just decide what kind of care is accessible in your places of business. I would suggest, I would ask that in these bylaws, you consider adding some language around reproductive health care access, given the people of Minnesota support that, and given that we're going to be passing a law that provides this fundamental access to making these decisions. The act itself does not guarantee coverage. It does not guarantee access. But should a provider or a local group of providers say that they're not willing to provide this type of care, it certainly makes it much harder for Minnesotans to access this kind of health care.
Thank you, Representative Watum. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a couple questions, but I'm going to narrow it down to just one. For both of you, it strikes me as very odd that you come here, and I think you're looking to have our support, and I think I heard the AG say that 70% of doctors in Minnesota come from the University of Minnesota. And yet you come and you're not on the same page with the U on this. So I don't understand how you can come here and not have that kind of key piece of thing done, to be on the same page and then supporting what you're trying to do here. That's a big miss.
Mr. Gasson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. So as it relates to that matter, I think it's important, and if you even listen to what Mr. Franz and Dr. Tolar stated, maybe not at the pace, well, I'll say assuredly not at the pace that we'd all desire to be working together and driving towards decision. We're actively engaged in conversations with them. Our next meeting is on Wednesday, and we do see the world differently on certain of these points. That does not mean that we won't get to the right resolution. But at the end of the day, one of the other things that I think is important for us all to sort of understand is when it comes to decisions around the merger itself, the reason why the merger being proposed between Fairview Health Services and Sanford Health is that those are the two legal entities that will come together. We're not in a position by the nature of it as an institution to merge or come together with the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota is a separate and distinct and independent organization, obviously, and as such, it will continue to chart its own course, to make its own decisions. And so either from these seats or any other seats, neither of us can sort of compel one another to want to see the future the same way. I think as Mr. Franz announced recently on January 12th, we heard the university articulate a new vision for itself and its future. And if I could be so bold to state, I think it refers to more of a pluralistic type of approach as it looks to who it will partner with in the future. And as I've stated from the get-go, the very first meeting I've had with them, every meeting I've had publicly, we stand at the ready to work with the University of Minnesota on whatever that vision looks like. We don't get to decide its vision. We don't get to shape its vision. But should it decide that it wants to have sort of a pluralistic relationship with all the health systems across the state of Minnesota, that's great. We will be one of those very good partners. If they decide to do something that's a little bit more akin to the more tight affiliation that exists today, we stand at the ready and we'll be able to do that. But as it goes through its decision-making process, every single day, Mr. Hereford and I are charged with making the best possible decisions we can to lead our organizations. And the care that our incredible physicians and nurses deliver every day is life-saving care. And the decisions that we make have an absolute impact on that. And so we don't have the luxury of delaying the decisions that we have to make. We are not afforded that right. The decisions that we make, the financial implications of those decisions, have significant impact on our ability to provide sustainable services. And for us at Sanford Health to continue to invest in communities like Bemidji, like Worthington, Thief River Falls, Laverne. I mean, these are significant investments we make there. We're proud of the changes that we're able to make in those communities. And I would say that that is what we should look to when we have questions around what does the future look like? What would it mean for Sanford Health to increase its partnership here in the state of Minnesota? Judge us based on our history, which is that we will continue to invest, we will continue to add jobs, we will continue to add services, we will continue to improve access, and we will continue to elevate the standard of care.
I think Mr. Hereford wants to respond to that. Before I do think, Mr. Gaston, with respect, you're downplaying the university statement. Dr. Tolar said in the committee that the university opposes this merger very directly. That's the testimony I heard. Mr. Hereford, I don't know, you wanted to speak to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've had a long-standing partnership since 1997 between the University of Minnesota and Fairview Health Services. We purchased a distressed and failing academic medical center on the East Bank in 1997. Since then, we've continued to build that relationship. Now, unannounced, we heard about a new vision. And Mr. Gasson and I have been very clear. We will support the university in the direction that it wants to go. The agreement in 97 runs through 2026, as we said. Last year, we spent about $900 million in revenue given to the university, given too strong, earned part of the academic support, et cetera. That's in a year we lost $462 million. So there's no doubt about our commitment to the university. My support of academic medicine, I will remind that I came from Stanford University before I came here. a top 10 university in clinical medicine, as well as recognized broadly as a place of excellence. I believe in academic medicine. But just to stress, we can't dictate what the University of Minnesota wants to do. It has to do that. And we'll stand in support for them to pursue that. And we have another 4 years to work with them to help support them in that direction as they specify.
Representative Kraft, did you have any follow-up to that?
I mean, just the only thing, I appreciate all the comments. But something about the position you're taking isn't sitting well, right? Like, if you say that and they felt that support, then wouldn't they be sitting here saying, hey, we're supportive of this? So there's some decision you all made that says, you know what they want, we're not on board with. It just something doesn't make sense here.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to go a little different tact than we've been having. I'm interested in data and information. So you've got a transition period, and then after 2026, I'm interested in what is the total impact on capacity, types of capacities, beds, exam rooms, emergency departments. Will this impact PGX and mental health? Those areas, and I know that we don't have the time for you to give that here, but offline, send to the committee members that actual, so we can see and understand what is actually going to happen instead of all of the let's look in the sky and guess. Yeah. The next thing is these issues that are being brought up seem more of symptoms than the actual cause. So if you can enlighten some of the driving factors to the committee about, frankly, if we looked at the consolidation's been an issue. Well, we've had consolidation ag and farm because of government regulations, laws, and et cetera. And if we can understand, because this is the legislature, and it's our duty to understand something's happening, we don't like it. We see the symptom that we don't like, and we'd like to find out the cause. So if you can illuminate us on some of the things that are driving it. Mm-hmm. I know some of them have to be federal. Some might be because of Minnesota communities and the services that are needed, etc. It'd be nice to understand the drivers, because I think about 10 years ago you were looking at doing the same thing. And apparently things haven't gotten any better. So if you could enlighten us that way and then give us more data later on. Thank you.
And I'll let who wants to take that first? It's a very important and big question, so if you can try and give a concise answer and then follow up, as Representative Quam suggested. But it's an important question.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for the question. It is a big question. Let me address parts of it that I can in this setting, and then happy to talk more about the nature of the healthcare industry and what's impacting it. Point of fact, we don't have a physical capacity problem. We have more than enough beds. The biggest constraint that we have is a trained workforce. There are not enough nurses, there are not enough techs, there are not enough professional clinicians to be able to support the volume of care that we should and could have for physical capacity. In addition, we are in the middle of a meltdown in post-acute care. In any given day in Fairview's hospitals, we have 100 to 150 patients who do not need acute care, but there is no other place for them. In addition, we have a significant number of people coming to our ED who frankly don't need ED-level care, but they can't gain access to other parts of the system, or they're financially disincented to. So the questions that you raise are big questions. And what I would urge us to do at the proper moment is to think much more broadly about healthcare and the healthcare ecosystem in the state of Minnesota. Because in large part, what we have to do is we cost shift, right? Medicaid pays 60, 70, 80 cents on the dollar. Medicare doesn't cover our costs. Commercial insurers have to make up the difference. Well, that is not a prescription for business vitality in Minnesota. So I can't fully answer your question because it's too big and too good, but that at least take some nibbles off of it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gasson, yeah.
My attempt to briefly.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, what I would say is some of the things that you did talk about at first often have been left out of some of the conversation, but those are very important. When you talk about investments in PGX, I mean, the focus on precision medicine, the ability for us to be able to leverage AI in a more impactful way, investments in virtual care, those are examples of when you think about the power of two organizations coming together, there's a fixed cost associated with those investments, whether it's Sanford alone or whether it's Sanford and Fairview. And so those are the types of things that I know will have a major impact on our ability to deliver care, and not just to bring sort of up to par, but for us to be able to continue to push the envelope to ensure that we're providing the best possible care to our patients. Those are investments that we've made today that we're excited to be in to use with Fairview to have a larger scale impact.
Representative Quam, do you have a brief follow-up to that?
Oh, just in general, every time we have a situation come before us, by getting data and more familiarity on the background causes, I think we can make a bit better decision. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask the two testifiers a question, and then if I could bring the Attorney General back for my second set of questions, if that's all right.
Certainly.
Gentlemen, thank you for being here today. My question is, in the pursuit of trying to help those who are patients and employees and rely on Fairview and the Fairview system, the economics are changing, as admitted by several here today. You're seeking a merger partner at Fairview. Have you consulted with other clinics or other hospitals or other systems that might be Minnesota-based to see if a merger is feasible and likely with them?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, frankly, no. One of the major issues, because there's so much consolidation in the state of Minnesota, and especially in the Twin Cities, and let's be clear, the care delivery systems we love so much today are all a product of ongoing mergers and acquisitions. They didn't start out being Allina or Health Partners or Fairview. So you would run into immediate FTC issues because there would be way too much overlap. What makes this so compelling is the contiguous nature, but non-overlapping nature, right, of Sanford and Fairview Health Services. So it allows us to be able to think about how do we provide complementary care across the continuum from prevention and primary care all the way through quaternary level care, but without running afoul of the FTC or the AG, because we do have significant overlap. Point in fact, we do not.
That's correct. One thing, if I could, Mr. Chair, is just that there is power in that. You've heard about it here today. Healthcare is local, and it will continue to be local. So the ability to find a merger partner in the not-for-profit healthcare space that is close enough to still be relevant for our people, for our patients most importantly, yet not offend those state and federal regulatory issues. For us, the closest any one of our hospitals are is 75 miles from each other. And so that allows us to be able to still within those bounds from a regulatory perspective, but still do things that make sense for the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Driscoll's next set of questions, he said, were for the Attorney General, so I don't know if
Mr. Chair, if I could just have a quick follow-up with these gentlemen, and it will be quick, and then we can bring the Attorney General on.
Yeah.
Sure. So, gentlemen, you bring up something very important, that you do not have an overlap in your footprint. So maybe it's more of a statement. So if the two providers were to merge and you had a commercial health insurance policy that was with one or the other, it appears to me that you'd have more broader coverage across the state of Minnesota for emergency situation kinds of things where you wouldn't have to worry about out-of-network kinds of coverages and things, so there may be a benefit for folks in the state of Minnesota. Just a comment. We can bring the Attorney General down at this point.
We'll welcome the Attorney General back down. While he's coming down, I'll just say to members, it's my intention to allow this discussion to continue as long as possible. We have about 15 minutes left in our regular committee time. We can extend 15 minutes further. We will have Representative Bierman towards the end of that give a statement on his bill. There's a couple people who signed up to testify. We will allow them to testify today. But I will allow the conversation to continue as long as possible while still permitting that to happen. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Attorney General. My questions, hearing from the folks who are the principals in the merger conversations and discussions, they've told us that there really isn't an issue with overlap in the footprint. Sanford has been in doing business in Minnesota for 25 years. would it make it this an easier merger for your office to support if Sanford were a Minnesota-based company versus a South Dakota-based company?
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to answer your question in two ways. One is that what you're asking is what our legal analysis is ultimately going to be on the anti-competitive issues. I even if I had an opinion on it right now, I wouldn't say it. And the reason why is we have to let the process work properly. We are working diligently, and we've been doing discovery with the parties involved here. We're reviewing documents, and it simply would be I'm not here to make news about my opinion about the ultimate one of the major ultimate issues in this matter, which is whether or not I think it violates a statute regarding competition.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Attorney General Ellison, so if this merger fails because of the deadline not being able to get it done, or you know there's some statutory law changes or other provision changes, let's just assume that it doesn't happen for whatever reasons. What happens if Fairview closes their doors? How does that help if there's no other merger partner out there that has stepped forward to try to help the folks that many testify today that they're trying to help and the markets that they're trying to work in, and as some of you have suggested, services that are offered by Fairview that may not be able to be procured somewhere else that are making big headlines these days across the state of Minnesota. Mr. Attorney General?
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chair. Representative Driscoll, in all honesty, that is an excellent question. It is certainly one we've been contemplating. It's one we're trying to answer for ourselves. I'm simply not going to make news by opining on that question today, because it's one of the things that Minnesotans are counting on me to answer, to offer an opinion on after I've received all the information. We still have a community meeting we haven't done yet. We still have outstanding discovery we have yet to review. So even though I agree with you, it is a good question. It's such an important question that it is premature for me to answer right now. But I can assure you that in the next few weeks, I will answer that question. But before I do, I'm going to need to get more information because, I mean, as you noted, we're talking about it's a fairly precise assessment of the financial wherewithal of Fairview and the market that exists here and a whole bunch of other factors. So I have to demur on your question, sir.
Representative Driscoll, I can give you one more
yep.
follow-up.
It's a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair, and I bet you I can do it in 20 seconds.
Great.
We had a large facility, a healthcare facility in St. Cloud, Centricare, that was acquiring what was then St. Cloud Medical Group. And they were in the exact same footprint, and it was because the St. Cloud Medical Group just did not have the ability to be able to compete. And you know what they were told? If that merger takes place, we're going to stop it. And if those patients want to go over to Centricare because the clinic closed down, we're going to consider that to be a violation of that. So just remember that when you're inside your footprint, if you have a merger partner, that it's not always clean sailing either. So the folks in St. Cloud dodged a bullet on that one.
Thank you. The next, we have Representative Herr. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Liebling and Chair Stevenson. So I'm a little bit troubled by the conversation today. President in Fairview Health mentioned the issues around Medicaid and reimbursement and profitability. But, you know, I had a chance to sit with Minnesota Hospital Association and really talking about looking at the financial health of our hospitals. And I don't have trust or faith that the decisions that are being made actually are good decisions, because part of the reason why what I understood was that why hospitals are less profitable is because they got rid of some of the procedures that were really profitable, like knees and hip surgeries. And so when you're getting rid of your profitable pieces of your business and those are going to private entities to do that, you are actually creating your own problem, and now you're trying to solve your own problem. And so I guess I'm a little bit concerned about the conversation we're having and about acting in good faith. I mean, I'm seeing in trying to be profitable closing of like St. Joe's, which we had to deal with, that it was one of the biggest emergency mental health provider, and then to see that where that is gone, or to see that you all have actually outsourced some of your most profitable businesses, which is why your hospitals aren't profitable, and now you're solving it by trying to have a merger. And I guess to just, you know, respond to Representative O'Driscoll and his wondering, you know, what happens, I guess we can also take a part in that as a legislature, that we could, like at HCMC, 70% of their patients are on Medicaid. We could just increase Medicaid reimbursement so the hospitals will be profitable. Right? So, like, there's a lot of other things that we could be doing here, but I would also suggest, I guess I'm wondering why you would want to partner with Sanford when this is sort of a creation that is coming out of the fact that you all have made some decisions that got rid of your profitable businesses.
Mr. Hereford.
Mr. Chair, Representative, let me correct a misperception. We didn't outsource hips and knees. There is a significant gradient, and clinically it's more efficient to do orthopedic procedures in ambulatory surgery centers. And you will undoubtedly have noticed there are some very large orthopedic groups in our markets who are incented by health plans to have those procedures, patients have those procedures done in their ambulatory surgery facilities instead of the hospital. It's not my choice, was not a strategic plan. It was built part clinically, what was capable, and then incented by health plans to move cases there. Now, do I wish we had more ambulatory surgery centers? Sure. Those cost money. So that means it would have to come out of the capital proceeds that are a part of having a positive margin where we can reinvest. Remember, I have no access to capital markets other than the debt market. I have no shareholders. So it only comes out of our operating profits, and we reinvest that in its entirety back into our own care delivery system for the benefit of our patients. So if I could address Health East quickly, we stepped into a financially distressed organization, Health East. The East Metro was in danger of losing a significant provider. We stepped into that. Yes, there were some difficult decisions that had to be made, and I won't go into detail about the nature of the care provisions, but we have provided for care at St. John's. We've expanded that care capability in Woodwinds and St. John's. We've built out more services in the East Metro. And a previous presenter referred to Bethesda. We still have, in reference to the LTAC, long-term acute care facility, that is at St. Joe's, continues to be at St. Joe's. So we did not lose that capacity. And in combination with Dr. Tolar and I, we created the nation's first specialized hospital for COVID-19, in which we advanced the state of science and state of care around COVID-19. At the time, it was referred to as a novel coronavirus because nobody knew exactly how to care for it. We pioneered that. So we used that facility to its best services. At the end of the pandemic phase, and now we're in this endemic phase, that was no longer needed. What did we do? We used that to be able to provide housing for the homeless in the East Metro. So I will stand by our record in terms of what we've done in the East Metro to support and expand access to care and broader social determinants of health. The final marker for that is the community hub for health and wellness that we're doing with a number of partners that is dedicated to attend to social determinant issues, which we know have a far bigger influence on the care of our communities, the health of our communities, than frankly we do as care providers directly.
Representative, do you have a brief follow-up?
Yeah, just a quick comment. That I'm not disputing what you have done, but I will say that if what you are doing is working, we wouldn't have the highest level of homelessness rate if you are providing housing or if the services that you are providing, the hospitals that are around where St. Joe's was telling me a very different story about what is happening with patients and displacement of those patients into those other facilities. And we are not meeting patients where they are when we're moving them out to suburban hospitals because they have transportation issues in order to get to them. So if we're centering patients and we're centering not just profitability of our entities, then we are actually looking at all of those different things. And whether it is an intentional outsourcing of procedures, but it is the fact that hospitals did not see coming that these other services would be coming and then taking those profitable pieces of business, that there's some responsibility in our current healthcare providers and hospitals as well. I'll just leave my comments there, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and forgive me for turning my back to you as I ask the question. So I had an opportunity to meet with one of your representatives in my office the other day, and I was basically told that Fairview is not a health provider, and Fairview is a brand. So that it was made very clear to me that the M was not important. As a legislator, that M is very important to me because it represents our state, our university, and our care delivery system that I thought we had through our university physicians and our university research. So that was just, I'm going to put that on the table, was very alarming to me, because it was a disregard to Minnesota altogether. My concern today, and since other people have talked about delivery of health care, I'm going to switch us a little bit to the buildings, the assets, the resources. I believe you said, Mr. Herford, that M. Fairview merged with, took over the hospital in 1997. So from that time on, you have been in the non-for-profit business of delivering, of owning these buildings. Is that correct?
Mr. Herford.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we did purchase. We were already a not-for-profit entity. We have been for quite a long time. And, yes, we did purchase the East Bank in 1997.
All right. Thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my concern is the number of tax dollars that have been given to you or your entity through tax expenditures, being that you're a nonprofit, and making sure that Minnesota receives the value for those, that private-public partnership, if you will, making sure that we receive a return value on those dollars. When I think about, when I've been looking then at the M. Fairview system and I see the number of buildings that are now in the hand, labeled as M. Fairview, that are in the hands of real estate investment trusts, I wonder if you would like to say anything about that. How many of those buildings do you have that you now lease back from real estate investment trusts?
Mr. Herford.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know the exact number, but it is a small minority, if at all, where we have sold buildings and leased back those buildings. It may be true. Can I correct the record for one thing as well? The representation of M Health Fairview as a brand is exactly right. It is not a legal entity. It is a shared brand that we agreed to with the university to be able to have a common brand across the assets of Fairview so that we could use the entirety of the clinical platform to be able to bring academic medicine to all of the communities that we serve.
Mr. Herford, maybe you could provide Representative Cleveland with the information she's looking for with regard to REITs after the hearing.
May I ask one more question?
One more question, Representative Cleveland.
So my question to you is about these buildings. Were they offered at fair market value to those REITs? How was that? How were those buildings that were once in a nonprofit transferred to those REITs? And was it done in an open and competitive sale process? Or were these private deals that the general public did not know about? I'm still having trouble following the trail of these buildings, and I would like for you to provide for the committee more information about each and every one of those LLCs that is now owning buildings that were once in this nonprofit world. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
I'm guessing, Mr. Herford, it would be beneficial for you to provide that to the committee.
Mr. Chair, we will do so.
Later.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Next, we have Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you guys for being here. And I want to thank Representative Herr for bringing up HCMC. I think it's a perfect example of what's happening in our healthcare system. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Hennepin County was run by a seven-county member board. And it went through a huge change, and it was incredibly challenging. And it was it wasn't taken on lightly. And I don't think this decision, even though you guys only met for 6 months or whatever, was really taken on lightly. And my concern is that, you know, we as Minnesotans aren't looking at how do we work together to make sure that our ultimate outcome, the goals that we have, are serving our constituents, mm-hmm. are serving the people that we spend time trying to spend on, that you take the time to try to serve. And That's my concern. And I know that there's some issues with this March 31st date. And I get that. And what I heard is that that's a goal. I mean, you guys are trying to work through these things. And I guess my question, so that we can be crystal clear, is if you guys sign an agreement and it goes through, the university's still, you know, theoretically unhappy by March 31st, does it really change any of the circumstances that the U and the old entity and or the U and the new entity have to deal with?
Mr. Yassin?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the simple answer to your question is no. And I think that that's a very important question, so I'm glad that it's being asked here. And I think all people in the state of Minnesota should ask that question. And so that's why we've wanted to be very clear as we've planned for that, and we've wanted to provide those necessary assurances that it won't change, which buys everybody, including the state and the University of Minnesota, that requisite time as they just launched this new vision that I'm not sure that anybody else was aware of. We certainly weren't just this month. And so it gives us time to understand what does that mean and to be able to work through those details and how do we as a combined organization with a commitment to serve the people of Minnesota as we alone, Sanford Health, have done to date for the past 25 years, as of course Fairview Health Services has, how do we do that together in a way that makes sense? But to artificially hold up the coming together of these two organizations with a commitment to serve the state of Minnesota, to make greater investments, material investments in this state that are going to improve the lives of our patients, of our employees, and of the communities that we serve, while we wait for that to be determined, is not in the best interest of the state of Minnesota.
And Representative Nadeau, I'll give you one brief follow-up. I'll just note, members, we're not going to get to everybody on the list in the time we have, so if everyone could try and keep it brief, that would be helpful. Representative Nadeau.
I just want to say thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Next, Representative Tabke.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We go through this, I've been experiencing and have heard a lot of feedback from constituents who work with Fairview who are extremely opposed to this, the future of this merger. And so I'd like to know from you guys as to what you're doing to get feedback from nurses and from workers throughout, what you're doing to get that feedback, what it has seemed like to you guys and what you're doing to address it.
Mr. Hereford.
Mr. Chair, Representative. We continue to work on every day in communication, large and small. For example, we'll have another town hall this Thursday with all staff in two-way dialogue. We have the opportunity for our staff to talk to any of their supervisors, the people they report to. We have opportunities for them to communicate directly to my office and to the C-suite about how they're feeling about this. Those are all avenues that we have pursued and continue to pursue, and is consistent with how we've always approached our relationship with our employees, who, point of fact, that's where value is transmitted in healthcare. It is through our employees. So that has always been the highest value to me and to our organization.
Very brief, Representative, if you have one.
Yeah, the second part of that question is what are you hearing from those folks and what are you doing about it as it regards to the merger?
Mr. Hereford.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it continues to inform how we think about, how we approach, what's important. What we're hearing is both positives and negatives, right? And it's not unusual that people are concerned. Change is always a scary thing, right, for all of us. That's the human condition, right? People ask questions. But I have as many people saying, we really think this could be a very positive step for us going forward, as I have people who are echoing, we have deep concerns, or we have concerns, or just simply asking questions about, well, what about my health benefits? What about? And for all of those, we have a fact, we continue to build that, and we continue to engage with our employees.
Thank you
for the question.
Representative Ryer, and I'm afraid this is going to have to be the last member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to all testifiers. My question comes back to the size of the clinic network, the availability of services across the state. I ask this from the point of view that going back 30 years, I started working in the healthcare system. I have borne witness to many closures from healthcare systems acquiring other ones who said things like, and I'll quote, "We have no plans to close locations." So you may not have plans, but I've seen it. I've seen it in Minnesota. I've seen it in other states where I've been doing research. And I would like to know, what can you tell me to assure me that constituents in Minnesota, people living in different states, different locations, who are relying on the availability of that care, continue to receive the care that they desire and that they are currently getting? Thank you.
Mr. Gaston.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. First and foremost, I would say look to the track record that we at Sanford Health have in our communities. We heard testimony just as recently as the past 2 weeks in Worthington and Bemidji about the dire nature of care in those communities prior to coming together and merging with Sanford Health. As you know and cited, across this country, especially in rural communities, hospitals continue to close. They are not sustainable. They cannot be sustained on their own. As they come together, and there is research out there on this as well, that as being a part of a system, they have a better chance of being able to stay in those communities and grow and being invested in, which is what we've done. It's what we will continue to do as we move forward, whether it's rural, whether it's tribal communities, whether it's more densely populated urban metropolitan communities. That's what we will do. In addition to that, as it relates to the assurance, that is why, as I stated here today, I've put that in writing to the Attorney General Ellison and his office. That's why that's something that we will intend to do as well in furtherance of that, to make sure that his office has assurances to one of the other questions, as he said, that falls outside of charities and antitrust analysis, but really more into just the best interest of the people of the state of Minnesota. And we firmly believe, based on our experience, that absent the opportunity that Mr. Hereford and I have talked about here today of bringing the organizations together, we'll continue to see more of what you've described there in the reduction of services available across the state.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't recall, forgive me, are those written assurances to the Attorney General being made available to the committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative, right now we want to work closely with Mr. Ellison's office. As you stated here, he still is going through his process and his review. And so whatever, as we go through this, that would come out on the other end, we'd be happy to share, but want to make sure that we maintain the appropriate relationship with and to his office. So, but the reason why I've been able to speak to this here is that's a commitment that we've made, not only in this context, but we've shared with our people, we've shared broadly in our communities. Mr. Hereford and I will share tomorrow night in Grand Rapids as well, too.
Thank you to the witnesses, the testifiers today, and to members for questions. I apologize. Members who didn't have a chance to ask questions, we appreciate you being here. We have to move on to the bill. I just want to make sure that the people who signed up to testify.
Procedural question. How many folks didn't get a chance that were on the list? Just out of curiosity.
I see two people on the list here, but we are out of time.
Thank you.
And we need to make sure there are members of the public who signed up to testify on Representative Bierman's bill, and I would like to make sure they have a chance to speak today before we have to be done.
Thank you to the
so we will,
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, thank you so much for your time.
So we'll now take up Representative Bierman's bill, which we're hearing informationally, so no motion is necessary. But Representative Bierman, if you could please describe your bill to the committee. I will just say, members, we're not going to do questions or discussion on this today. We are taking the bill up on Wednesday. The purpose of what I'm doing now is to make sure that we get the public testimony, the people who came here today to speak to this bill, the chance to speak. So Representative Bierman, if you could just give us an overview of your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Thank you, Chair Liebling. And thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to bring this bill draft forward. As we have heard from testifiers today, there are many issues before us regarding the effects of the potential merger of Sanford Health of South Dakota and the Fairview Hospital System of Minnesota. These issues and considerations are central to the role of the Commerce and Health Finance Committees. As we seek to build statewide medical services, incorporating the complete array of needed networks for all levels of care, the impact of mergers should have more careful examination to ensure a public benefit. This merger is not just a transaction between private entities. We stand at another intersection where corporate health services, which underpin our delivery model, meet the public health requirements we in this legislature are bound to facilitate. Healthcare is a partnership between private providers, public providers, and governmental agencies. This merger between two of the largest healthcare organizations will impact the entire state healthcare system. So while a few public comment hearings around the state are a good start for citizen participation, regarding this merger, we need to dig in like we are doing today to review and consider the issues surrounding all identifiable implications for the health of our citizens. This joint committee should utilize the tools of research and experts on healthcare we have available right in this building in conjunction with the Minnesota Department of Health to obtain a clearer vision regarding such a significant change to our healthcare landscape. Because of the rush to close the deal, this issue has become paramount now. This is not simply a case where speed of a deal getting done will enhance public health policy. Our central focus, our guiding principle in evaluating this proposed merger should be the improvement of delivering quality health care for Minnesotans across the state while improving access and affordability. To achieve this, we need answers to many relevant questions, some of which we started to hear today. And then there is the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota is at the center of public health efforts in our state. As we heard, we obtain the preponderance of our medical professionals from the U of M. From research to health science instruction, our land-grant university is a focal point of our efforts around healthcare across the state. This position should not be diminished in any way. A merger that sweeps up valuable public assets and needed community health resources would be detrimental to the citizens and taxpayers of this state. While waiting to resolve the role of our university and the charitable assets involved until after the merger would not be a desirable outcome. Let us, as a legislature, perform our public task and assess this merger and future mergers through the lens of assuring the better health and well-being of the people we serve. This merger must be about making a correct judgment. The bill before you can help guide us all in that task. Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Thank you, and we did have two members of the public sign up to testify. We'll hear from them now. First is Ann Schwegel, the Vice President of the Minnesota Farmers Union. Ms. Schwegel, if you'd come forward, state your name for the record and proceed your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Stevenson, Liebling, and committee members, I'm going to try not to knock anything off the table. My name is Ann Schwegel, and I'm the Vice President of Minnesota Farmers Union, which is a grassroots membership organization that has represented Minnesota's family farmers, ranchers, and rural communities since 1918. I'm also a grain farmer in Big Stone County near Browns Valley on the western edge of the state. Thank you for holding this informational hearing and to Representative Bierman for introducing this important piece of legislation that will give our state new tools to prevent the harmful impacts of anti-competitive healthcare consolidation. At our annual convention last year, MFU members voted to make access to affordable healthcare and limiting corporate control and promoting competition as our top two priorities for the upcoming year. The proposed merger of Fairview and Sanford, as well as extreme consolidation of healthcare generally, sits at the intersection of these two important issues for farmers all across the state. Greater Minnesota already has one of the most highly concentrated hospital markets in the entire country, and studies have shown that insurance premiums on the individual market are higher in areas with extreme concentration. A particularly important issue for farmers who disproportionately face high prices on the individual market, leading them to seek off-farm work or forego coverage altogether, a decision that could prove to be financially devastating to them. Healthcare monopolies don't just raise costs, they reduce services. I live on the border of Big Stone and Traverse counties, where between the two whole counties, there is only one hospital that provides obstetric care. It is incredibly difficult to raise a family and ensure the next generation of family farmers to raise the food that we all enjoy in rural Minnesota if there's nowhere to deliver your babies. Unfortunately, Minnesota's current laws may be inadequate to prohibit the further monopolization of our healthcare system, which only leads to further cost increases, poor conditions for healthcare workers, and less access to services, particularly in rural communities. Our members have made it clear. If there is anything that the state can do to make farming easier, it would be to reduce the cost of healthcare. And while that is a multifaceted task, preventing further monopolization on this important piece. MFQ looks forward to working with Representative Bierman and the two committees on this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wagle. Last, we have Allison Leopold. Ms. Leopold, if you come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Yes, thank you for having me. My name is Allison Leopold, and I'm a second-year medical student at the University of Minnesota. I'm joined with a lot of my colleagues here in the white coats, and we're standing here in support of Representative Bierman's bill and against the Fairview-Stanford merger for a host of reasons. First, this merger would tank the educational standing of our school. The U of M currently ranks in the top three for primary care in the nation, and a lot of students come here for that academic excellence. Stanford is a nondescript medical school that, of the 124 ranked medical schools in the country, Stanford doesn't even make the list. It's below 124. So merging with Stanford would tank the academic reputation of the medical school, meaning fewer students would come here to train. And I'll remind you, we've heard this many times today, that the U of M trains 70% of Minnesotan physicians. So fewer students training here means fewer physicians in Minnesota. Another concern is research. A lot of students come here for the renowned research facilities, and research is also a great way for patients to get access to innovative technologies, life-saving medications that they wouldn't have access to outside of a clinical trial. Stanford is a corporation. It has no commitment to research. It doesn't care about academic excellence. In fact, it has only promised to maintain Fairview's research interests for the next 2 years. The average length of a clinical trial is 6 years, so that is worthless information to us. So merging with Stanford would destroy the research capabilities of the medical school. Again, fewer students would come here, fewer students would train here, fewer physicians for Minnesota. Third, this merger would likely close down rural hospitals and clinics. This classically happens as healthcare conglomerates grow. They find that hospitals in rural areas aren't profitable enough for them. They shut them down. Once again, we train 70% of Minnesotan physicians. So what I don't understand is how the Fairview and Stanford CEOs can look us medical students in the eyes and tell us that they are increasing healthcare access for patients when historically, in the real world, in truth, these mergers shut down the closest hospital within a 70-mile radius of our patients' homes. Lastly, and I'll keep it brief because I know we're running short on time, one of the biggest concerns for us is cost, which was brought up. The Fairview and Stanford CEOs might like to say that costs will decrease, but in medical school, we're taught to support our claims with data. So here's the data. Mergers like this have historically caused increases in out-of-pocket costs for patients up to 40 to 50%. Minnesotans already struggle to afford healthcare. So we as medical students cannot be complicit in a system that continues to perpetuate the bankruptcy of our patients as we're just trying to give them the healthcare that they need and that they deserve. Lastly, before I close, I just want to mention the innovation plan by the U is not a solution to this merger. To build a brand new academic hospital a mere half mile down the road from the one that we already have, which is fantastic, which we should hold on to, that new hospital is redundant. And it wouldn't solve problems of increased cost. And we would rather see $1 billion from our legislature go to a public hospital that would be able to provide the routine preventative services that Minnesotans really need. So, U of M students, do not support the Fairview-Stanford merger. We strongly stand in support of Representative Bierman's bill. And we do not support increased out-of-pocket costs for patients and the closure of rural hospitals. Thank you.
Thank you. We are well past time, so we'll have to leave it there. The committee will take up Representative Bierman's bill at our hearing on Wednesday at 1 p.m. The Commerce Committee will. Thank you to the Health Committee members who joined us today and for everyone who came to testify. With that, the hearing is adjourned.